This is the WTIP Boundary Waters Podcast.
This is the wilderness that Dave and I were both introduced to as kids. You know, our first wilderness camping experiences were in the Boundary Waters.
And in summer, you wake up, you swim through the lake, you have breakfast, then you can relax, you can go paddling, you can go hiking.
We've done this trip before to Horseshoe Lake, and I remember catching walleye there before.
I went on a canoe trip in the Boundary Waters, and it was really cool. It was my first time.
The route from Ram Lake back to Poplar Lake with no packs, with only a day pack, we take it in one day.
Well, you can look to Venus, you can look to Mars. I will set my sights by the northern star and in the deep dark blue. Come the northern lights. Oh, and in the deep dark blue, come the northern lights.
Welcome to episode 7 of the WTIP Boundary Waters Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Baxley.
And I'm Joe Fredericks.
We are excited to have you all joining us today. Episode 7 is our first three-part episode.
We went for the trifecta on this one.
And it is a trifecta of glory, I might add. And really, there was just so much good stuff happening that we just wanted to get it all in for you, and we didn't want to have to wait on any of it. So you're going to hear today, coming up a little later in the episode, you're going to hear from Tim Barton. Joe visited with Tim, who is an Ely-based guide in the Boundary Waters, and they're going to be talking about a topic that I'm sure all of you have discussed at some point, which is the best footwear for portaging.
You know, Matthew, I'm still like in the midst of this, even though I've been going to the Boundary Waters for, you know, years and years, and I'm still looking for that perfect boot or shoe for me personally. That, you know, I mean, I've tried different options, and people always have their favorite, and I'm still on the hunt. So I went to Ely to try to find the answer to that question. And it was fun to visit over there. I went to Paragus and talked with Tim over there.
Hopefully there's some nuggets of wisdom for all of us to glean. After that, at the end of this episode 7, we're going to hear from a woman named Beth Gady. She's a pretty amazing woman. She's, just like most of you listening, is an avid outdoors person, as a fly fisher, Western Wisconsin. She spent a lot of time in Montana, saltwater flats of the Yucatan Peninsula, believe it or not. But she doesn't talk about that. She talks about one of her most memorable epics from the Boundary Waters, including storms, including getting separated from her group and sleeping in a crazy situation. So you're going to hear her story at the end of today's show. But first, we're going to start off with a really inspiring tale.
Yeah, this was one that I've had on my radar for the podcast, Matthew, since I first did an interview with Jason from Ely Outfitting Company. He's the owner of Ely Outfitting, and he contacted us at WTIP, just at the radio station, for an interview to get on the air to get the word out about an essay contest that he was putting together. He wanted to hear from some local or regional, rather, you know, Minnesota youth, people, teenagers, you know, young people who go to the Boundary Waters. He put out a challenge, and he said, you write an essay, page and a half, tell me why you like the Boundary Waters, submit it. And then he had a group of panelists, like Amy Freeman was one of the people that, you know, read these essays, and they picked a winner.
People of note.
Definitely, yeah. And so there was a whole process that went through, and this was just, you know, on the regular WTIP, the Star Tribune had an article about it, NPR.
Flyers all over the place.
Yeah, there was a huge deal. And he got, I think, more than 70 people submitted these essays. One winner, and her name's Julia Ruel. And she's from the Twin Cities area, was a sophomore at the time at Minnetonka High School. And Julia's story was, of course, definitely about the Boundary Waters and how much she loves it and why it's important to her. But Julia also was battling brain cancer at the time that literally at the time that she wrote the essay.
I think in that regard, the best way to sum up this story without giving too much away is that the Boundary Waters, its essence, its power, its beauty, literally played a significant role in her battling brain cancer, in her recovery from brain cancer, and now in her celebration of that phase of her life being done.
Exactly. And so what this contest was is whoever won got a fully outfitted trip from Ely Outfitting Company. All the gear, all the food. She got to bring three of her friends on the trip.
And they were specifically youth, so it was the parent-free exactly. Boundary Waters trip. And who doesn't want that?
Yeah, so Julia did this trip, Matthew, in June 2018. I went over to Ely to meet up with the group right after they were coming out of the wilderness. Let's hear what she had to say.
Awesome.
So we're here today at the Ely Outfitting Company, and I'm with Julia Ruel and her mother, Linda. So Julia, you are just returning from Boundary Waters trip. So we want to talk about your trip, of course, but I also want to talk about what led up to your essay and how it came to be. I think that's perhaps even more important today than your trip.
So Linda, actually, let's start with you. You're Julia's mom. And let's start with how this essay came to be. There was a health scare, a very serious health scare with Julia. And just tell us about where that was in 2017. It's the winter of 2017-18.
And where we are now with that.
Yes, in Thanksgiving of 2017, Julia started having really bad headaches and nausea and vomiting. And we couldn't figure out what was wrong. Lots of trips to the urgent care. We even had to go to the ER via ambulance, and there was just no one knew what was wrong until she had an MRI, and a mass was found in her brain in the pineal region. So we found out that she had a germinoma, which required surgery to, Julia, do you remember the name of it, the surgery?
Yeah. It was endoscopic third ventriculostomy.
Okay. You got that one memorized. Yeah. Okay.
So, and because basically she was experiencing a mass in her brain, which was preventing the flow of fluids, and she had hydrocephalus. And so they put a hole in the third ventricle of her brain. So brain surgery was the first step, which was quite terrifying as a parent. And then after that, we received the diagnosis because they also did a biopsy, and we received the diagnosis of a germinoma. So that started us on a whole new unexpected trip into the world of cancer.
And so, Julia, what has this done? We're you know, of course, talking about your health now and this where we are today here in June 2018, and you're smiling and you're healthy and happy, and you've just completed a Boundary Waters trip. So as you're going through the various stages of treatment to deal with this issue that your mother just described, how did this essay contest? So Jason, who is the owner of Ely Outfitting Company, had contacted us at WTIP and some other media organizations in early 2018 and said, I'm going to put out a challenge of an essay contest, and whoever wins this, a teenager or a young person who likes the Boundary Waters, we're going to outfit their trip. So how did you find out about this essay contest, Julia?
So I saw it in the newspaper one morning, and apparently my dad had, like, set it out so I would see it, but, like, not actually tell me about it because he wanted it to be, like, genuinely my interest. And then it was actually, like, the essay contest was due, like, the next Monday. So I wrote it all in, like, two nights. But it was just, like, really exciting to channel my energy into something that wasn't, like, cancer. Like, it was something that I was interested in aside from the past few months being so crazy. And then, like, once I won it, I had this new thing to be excited about, like, to look forward to and kind of, like, not use, yeah, I guess kind of use as, like, a goal to get better and be able to go on this trip with all my friends and do all the things I would have done if I hadn't gotten cancer.
Yeah, and so when you were writing the actual essay, you were sort of in the midst of the treatment and you were, you know, dealing with some serious stuff at that time?
Yeah, I think it was right after chemo treatment, or a couple weeks, was it, Mom?
Yeah, it was in the midst of the chemo treatment.
Yeah, it was during chemo.
Okay. And were you in school at this? Like, have you been able to continue, you know, your education in school and so forth?
Yeah, so I would, like, miss about a week of school for each chemo, which I had four, how many day cycles? 21 day cycles of chemo. which only three of those days I actually was receiving chemo. So like 1 week every month I was not in school. But aside from that, I was keeping up with all my schoolwork. And it was kind of, I don't know, for me it was a welcome distraction and like a good place to channel my energy, I guess.
Yeah, and so you just completed your sophomore year of high school at high school in Minnetonka, okay? And so you'll be headed into your junior year, and you wrote this essay. And can you just give us an overview? I've had the opportunity to read it, but could you share with us a little bit about the essay, what you wanted to put into it, and why that message was important for you?
So my, like, kind of main theme was just that I love being outside and, like, just that being outside is so essential to me and to who I am. And like, since I was writing it kind of as I had my diagnosis and I was like in full-fledged treatment mode, I mentioned a lot that like part of my coping with it was that I would go outside and like go for walks every day, even if it was just like 5 minutes. So like I wove the just simple being outside into it a lot, and then the Boundary Waters is kind of the ultimate outdoor adventure, so yeah.
Nice. So you said that you know, did you mention that what you were going through at the time with chemo and so forth?
Yeah, I think pretty much in the beginning of the essay I mentioned, like, so this year has been kind of crazy for me. Like, first I like mentioned how like all the athletic things that I do that are all outside, like running and skiing, and then I mentioned, well, this year I haven't really been able to ski or run that much because of cancer and affecting all of my life.
And I wanted to just add to that, just part of the whole treatment was, part of it was radiation, and she had to lay perfectly still for this radiation treatment, and she would think of herself being in the Boundary Waters, and I mean, you can probably explain that better than
so. It was like a place to go in your mind. You could, yeah. That was your safe place, was to go to the Boundary Waters in your mind when you had to lay still.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like channeled the peace and serenity that's in the Boundary Waters and helped use that to help me stay still and distract myself a little bit.
Yeah, that's amazing. So the Boundary Waters isn't unfamiliar territory to you and the family. Is that right?
Yeah, I think we started going when I was about 10, I think, or maybe I was younger.
Well, Dad went way before that, but you started going when you were younger than that.
Okay, so I was probably like 8 or 9, mm-hmm. With my family, and then we've kind of been going yearly since then. And then this was my first time going not with my family at all.
Yeah, yeah, nice. So that's okay. So now you've submitted the essay, and your treatment's maybe starting to wind down, and then how do you find out what's that day like, or who told you about that you had been chosen?
So we were actually, I just finished all my chemo treatment, but we were just starting my radiation treatment, which was in Rochester, which is like 2 hours away from my house. So we were in Rochester, like getting kind of like the orientation day for my radiation. And we were in the elevator about to go get dinner. It was actually during a snowstorm, so we were going to, like, walk across the street. So I was in the elevator, and I got a call, and it said it was from Ely, and I got super excited. I answered the call, and, and then Jason told me that I won.
Yeah, and it was actually Jason who was on the phone and said, you've been selected, and nice. And what was your reaction? I mean, how did you handle that?
I mean, we were all, like, sitting in the lobby, like, kind of, like, I don't know, we were trying to, like, stay calm, but we all were smiling super big and, like, we were super, super excited.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. And you were there, too, when this happened,
yes.
Linda?
My husband and I and Julia were there. We were in the elevator of the hotel, and it was just, we kind of thought, oh, it's some days have gone by, maybe, you know, she must not have won. And then she just screamed in the elevator, "It's Ely!" So it was really exciting.
Nice.
And perfect timing, being that we just started and we were at Mayo. I mean, how perfect.
Yeah. So. Nice. Okay, so that brings us to today. And now here we are at the conclusion of this trip. And so let's get into some of the details. You brought three friends with you. If you were chosen for the essay contest winner, you could bring some friends with you, fully outfitted, canoes, gear, food, the whole package. And who'd you bring up with you? Who are your friends that are outside unpacking while we're up here relaxing, drinking root beer? So tell us who came with you on this trip.
So they're all friends I've had for a while. It was Anna, Madeline, and Juliana. And I mean, two of them are friends from kind of cross country running, and then another one swims. So we're all kind of endurance people. And we're all really funny. We had a lot of giggles on this trip. But I'm glad most of our campsites were kind of set away. So I'm glad, because otherwise I think our neighbors would have been a little upset.
Yeah, away from those cranky fishermen who are up at dawn and so forth. Yeah, nice. And so had they done any trips with their families or friends in the past, or were there any first-timers coming up with you?
So they had each been there once. Madeline and I had actually gone on like a father-daughter trip a couple years ago, and then the other two had been here once. So I'm not sure when, but
okay.
Yeah.
And with every trip, they're just kind of naturally, or sometimes people even designate a leader of the trip. Who was that, you for this group, or how did that kind of fall into place?
I was kind of the leader. I'm not very good at navigating, which was a problem. So that was kind of other people's responsibility.
Yeah.
But we kind of divvied up all the roles pretty well. What was different for me, because like I usually would go up with my dad and he would just do everything pretty much, is like if there was something to do, I would do it instead of just like relaxing. Mm-hmm. But it was really satisfying to be like responsible and yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, Mom, what's your reaction to that? That, you know, you've been through this process with Julia's health and just even within the last 6 months, and now here we are and she's just completed this amazing journey and, you know, sort of emerged even as the leader of this trip amongst her own friends. As you can sit back now, and I know it's just, you know, the trip only ended an hour ago, but what's your thoughts and feelings to that?
Oh, I'm just so, well, I'm relieved. I've been, you know, thinking about her a lot, thinking, and there was a big snow or rainstorm last night and thunder, and I thought, oh, dear. But, you know, they came off. They were all four of them, you know, strong women, young women, and they were all smiling. They got along, and I, you know, the drive back from the entry point was just lots of stories and giggles and smiles, and it's just super gratifying, and, you know, it gave her such a goal when she was going through some tough times. And so this just could not have written itself any better. You know, it's been really just like a dream.
Yeah. And is your health now, I mean, are you back to, is it safe to say you're at 100% physically and just, you know, your strength is there to where you're at now compared to just not long ago?
Yeah, for sure. I'm pretty much back to normal. I'm not like on any medications really. And I mean, aside from needing to build up some strength since I haven't been able to run for a while, it's pretty much back to normal.
Yeah. That's great. And so let's hear maybe just another story from this most recent trip, just either something that happened, you know, to the group while you were out there, or just an observation you made on this most recent trip, just, you know, an anecdote from when you were out there.
So right in the very beginning, we were paddling and, you know, you're feeling good because you were starting and everything was going well. And then we came up kind of next to some men who were also paddling, and they had like the straight shaft paddles and we had the bent shaft paddles. Mm-hmm. And they thought that we were going kind of slow, I guess. So he decided to wanted to help, I guess, and told us that we had our bent shaft paddles the wrong way. And said we had to scoop them like they were shovels. And we just looked at him and we're like, no, we've got it. This is right. We know it is. And then the other guy in the canoe was like, yeah, they're right. But it was just a fun moment.
Yeah, nice. So the supposed know-it-all maybe guy comes up and tries to tell you what's up. And the reality was you were doing it right. You're just not in a rush. Like maybe he thought you should have been or something.
Yeah.
Nice. That's cool. And Mom, did you have any observations of anybody, you know, maybe as they were starting the trip while you were at the launch or as they were coming back today?
Well, at the start of it was kind of funny because the girls, Jason did a wonderful job of orientation and telling them everything, what to do and how to handle the canoes and fill them when they're in the water. And the girls really did that. They went right in the water. They put the packs in the canoes in the water, and they just took off. And there were a lot of guys, a lot of boys waiting to go, and they just went in. Anyway, as the girls were paddling off, I heard one of the leaders of that group say, "Guys, watch the girls. That's how you do it. You put the packs in the canoes while they're in the water. Otherwise, you're going to wreck those Kevlar canoes." So I was kind of like, "Yeah, you go, girls. Yeah. Nice job."
Yeah, nice. No, that's cool.
Yeah, it was nice.
And so, Julia, what is this place now? Either, you know, as you've done these family trips or with the essay and this place where you were able to go in your mind as you were dealing with your health issues this last winter, what's the Boundary Waters mean to you? Like, why do you care about this place, and why is it so special to you?
Part of it is definitely the way that it's an escape. Like, there's really nowhere else that I can go where it's just completely removed from the rest of my life. Like, usually in my life, I always have my phone on me, and I'm always connected to 100 things and kind of stretched kind of thin. But in the Boundary Waters, like, all you're thinking about is getting to a campsite and setting up and making the fire, which are all just like more simple, like survival kind of things, which I really like. And it's also just so serene there. Like, it's just the water lapping against the shore, and the trees are all, I don't know. This at one of our campsites, there were a bunch of pine trees, and like, we had fun watching them like bend super far as it blew, as the wind was blowing. And it was just, I don't know. There's so much to observe here, and you can take the time to make all those observations.
Yeah, nice. And so do you do some journaling or reading, or what's a kind of a typical day, you know, at camp for you, or even on this trip?
So we all brought hammocks. So we did a lot of sitting in those, a lot of reading. We all did some journaling too. It was a lot of contemplative. We were quieter than I expected a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Also very chatty a lot of the time. Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah, cool. And so you're even starting now to get involved with groups like the Save the Boundary Waters campaign, and you're headed out to Washington, D.C. here in this summer to do some awareness about why the Boundary Waters is important. And why has that become something that you wanted to get involved with, just, you know, either promoting or even, you know, advocating for the wilderness?
Well, I found out about the mines and the threat that they posed to the Boundary Waters in eighth grade. So that was like 2 or 3 years ago. And it's always been on my mind. And like, I've always wanted to do something about it. But as a high schooler, you know, things like that sometimes get pushed to the side. And then with the essay contest, if you keep kids interested in the Boundary Waters, you're like ensuring that it will always be protected and always be loved. And like, it just makes sense to me that we should have it in the hands of like the next generation instead of the generation that's might be more tired of it, or like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's great. Great to hear. And what, I know you're just headed into your junior year of high school, but any thoughts on, you know, making a career out of either, you know, in a wilderness advocacy role, or just, is it, you seem so passionate about this place that is it something that you'd want to come up and maybe even work at an outfitter camp for a summer, or what do you think about something like that?
I have trouble thinking about the future and careers and stuff because I kind of like a little bit of everything, but I would definitely enjoy that. One thing I know that I'm interested in, I think, is like environmental science, and with the stress on like conservation and sustainability. So mm-hmm. It's kind of related.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, this has been a real pleasure for me to not only come here today, but I've been, you know, talking with Jason since the beginning of this, as I mentioned, and now to come here and spend time with you and your mother, of course, and kind of see this trip and the reality of it, that it's not just just an idea anymore, or kind of a tangible thing. Like, to actually be here is it's great for me, and I hope the people on the podcast here are, you know, enjoying this story as well. And just anything else that you want to say, either about, you know, this process, this what you've been through in the last year, or about this trip, or just about the Boundary Waters?
Well, I just remembered another funny story.
Yeah, perfect. That's what we love on the podcast. It's all about stories. So
So we, one of our, let's see, on the Rifle Lake, lake and campsite, we decided we wanted to do a day trip to one of the lakes next to it. I don't really know why, because it was a really long portage, and once we got to the lake, we just sat there. But we decided to do it, yeah. And the portage was pretty rough, and it was the longest one we did on the whole trip, and there were a bunch of mosquitoes because it had rained the day before. So we just had two canoes in a pack, so it worked out that we had one person that could, like, run between the canoes and the pack. So that person was armed with bug spray, and we'd be walking with our canoes on our back, and we'd yell, "We need bug spray!" And they'd come and they spray it in the canoe. Nice. So we used a lot of teamwork to get over those things.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I'm sure the stories that you guys had are they'll just be popping up on the whole ride home back to the cities today. And sounds like it was a great trip for you and your friends. And actually, just lastly, my own observation was I noticed that your one friend had some duct tape on her shoes. Can I ask about that? What happened there?
So they're actually her mom's shoes that she had given her from, like, I think they've had them for a long time, but they're good hiking boots.
Yeah.
So she thought, like, oh, I'll try them out. Like, they should be good for this trip. And then on our very first portage, she looked down, and I think, like, the entire soles had come off. They were, like, attached at the heel, but nowhere else. Uh-huh. So both of her boots did it at the same time, too. I don't know how that happened. So I think first we just tried duct tape, and it held a little bit. And then my dad had given me this survival kit with this special tape that we used, and that actually held up pretty well, but her boots are just falling apart. It was funny.
Yeah, no, that's great. And again, just for the people listening to this, when I first saw the group of four, they all grinning ear to ear, and so it sounded like you had a great trip out there, and thank you so much for talking with us today.
And thank you very much for listening, and it's been great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it, the tale of an amazing Boundary Waters inspired adventure once again. I feel so grateful that Julia was willing to share this with us. I hope that inspires many more people.
You know, sometimes when you're in the presence of someone, Matthew, regardless of their age or anything about them, any characteristic, you can just tell that they are great people and that they're fearless and that they just, they're celebrating life just by living.
Yes. Uh-huh. Right.
And Julia is one of those people, man. It was a great experience to hear about that trip, literally just right after it ended. You know,
I think we have to give some props to Linda, because kids don't just end up that way. And I'm sure that that's been some work done.
Yeah,
to lead her up to that spot by Linda and her husband.
Yeah, exactly. So thankful to them. Great trip. Thankful to Ely Outfitting, who hosted me for the day over there, and of course outfitted the entire trip for Julia and her friends.
You know, I want people to make sure they know that there is an awesome sort of video that Julia and her friends made post trip that just shows some real fun highlights, and it captures a lot of things she talked about, and you can find that on the WTIP homepage. And you can just search for that on there. And I think we're going to have some other pictures up too, possibly.
Yep, absolutely.
But now we really need to answer all the questions that we've all asked about portage shoes.
It's such an important part of a trip, Matthew.
Essential.
It is. And I've seen all ends of the spectrum. You know, Dave and Amy Freeman, of course, right? Who are very well-known Boundary Waters people. They did a year in the wilderness, and they've been involved with the Boundary Waters for a long, long time. I went and paddled out and met Dave and Amy when they did their year in the wilderness, met them on Rush Lake up mid-trail area. Dave comes pulling up, and I'm thinking he's going to be, you know, the most hardcore shoe boot you could ever find. He's out there for a year in the wilderness. And he had these old tiny sneakers on. He just hopped in, and he was getting in the water with them. I'm just like, huh.
Yeah.
Cool, like a pair of Reeboks. So it's different things for different people. It really is, but there's a lot of, you know, traction on a portage. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. There really is.
So let's hear what Tim Barton, professional guide in the Boundary Waters, has to say on the topic.
So we're here in Paragus, North Woods Company store here in Ely, downtown Ely. I'm here with Tim Barton. He's a guide for Paragus. Hey, Tim, thanks for taking some time to talk with us.
My pleasure.
So we're talking about footwear that you might want to use while you're doing a trip in the Boundary Waters. And for putting this in a frame of reference for people, we're going to go with this hypothetical that I'm just walking in off the streets from Memphis, or I just drove in from Tennessee, and you guys are going to outfit my trip for me. And I'm coming in to you, Tim, and I go, what do I need for footwear? Where do you start with somebody who's got a pair of Nikes or even like some leather shoes? And what do you help them with? What do you say?
Well, the biggest thing for people to be aware of is let them know what they're getting into. They need to know that this is rocks and roots, and they have a way of jumping up at you. So you need to be ready for it. But you're also going to be getting your feet wet. You got to step in and out, especially if you're using these Kevlar boats. If you run them up against rocks, you end up with cracks or holes, and that's the last thing you need when you're 20 miles out.
Yeah.
And so the biggest thing that I always try to remind people about is have a hard toe, and something that drains in the summer, and something that keeps you dry in the spring and fall.
We're in here in the shop right now in Paragus Northwoods, and we were over at the shoe where there's a number of options, I mean, to choose from. And a few of them stood out to us, and we got them here in front of us. Can you, Tim, just give us a brief overview, either seasonally or just maybe even a starting point for a boot or a footwear for a trip?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess for me, it's always about seasons. So spring and fall, when that water's cold, you know, just after the ice comes out or just after the ice is about to come in, you don't want that wet foot all day. So it's really important that you got something that'll keep you dry and warm and something that you can put back on the next day and not be freezing. Mm-hmm. And so what I like to use is a Chota Trekker.
Yeah, nice. And you got this here in front of you. It's a tan boot that has leather on the outside.
Yep. And it's waterproof, but drains on the sides. Mm-hmm. And it combines with a waterproof, breathable sock.
Okay. Wow. So yeah, the sock is like, yeah, okay,
with
nice.
A gator that attaches to the boot, and it goes all the way up to your knee. I've used this all spring, and I've yet to get my feet wet doing it.
Yeah. Okay, so this sock that we're looking at here, it looks, you know, it's got like a soft, it looks like maybe a liner of a winter boot or something. Yep. And you would put that on, you put your foot in there, and then you put that inside of this boot?
Right into the boot. Yep, absolutely. And so what you're getting is the comfort and, you know, ease of a hiking boot in the Boundary Waters, because you need to be able to grip on those rocks and be able to feel confident stepping on wet and slimy rocks, which this boot allows you to do. But then it also gives you a knee-high waterproof. And if you step it up to a hippie, you can go all the way up to your hip with it.
Yeah, nice. Okay, so this this boot now, this Chota, this company that we're talking about here, they're manufactured in Tennessee, but this is like a Paragus, I mean, it's a canoe country boot, right? And you have them for sale here in the shop. And and they're designed with the idea that these aren't, you know, going to be, they could be used maybe for hiking and glacier or something.
Absolutely.
But it's also like it's specific for paddling.
These are specifically built for what we're doing here in the Boundary Waters. They're to get in and out of the water. It's for grabbing and gripping these hard, tough rocks that we have to walk across these portages all the time on. So, you know, we've been involved in setting it up, and we sell them here at the store.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So you mentioned, you know, that's maybe like that's a hardcore option. It's going to get you, and that's going to work well on a portage trail too, not just getting in and out of the canoe?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can feel just as confident with this in a canoe as you would be walking across or up big hills and down big hills. Like I said, those rocks and roots, they tend to find you out there. And if you don't have something that can grip or keep you safe out there, you're setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah. So that, and when you say that, you know, what comes to my mind is maybe like the standard black rubber boot that you can buy at a hardware shop for $20 or something. That's setting you up for hard times.
Yeah, I mean, you got no ankle support there. The grips on them are not great. You're going to end up slipping off, especially when you get on some of those slimy boots or even just a wet rock face. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to slip right out underneath you. And I've seen that happen with people. And what's nice about this, especially with that breathable sock, is if you do step over, like let's say you go above your knee just a touch, it's not just going to drain right in like you would with a, you know, just a water boot or something like that. That does give you that gator. It tightens it up. It does have a way of keeping it dry. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, cool. Okay, and so now what about, you know, here we are in June is when I'm here over in Ely at the shop right now, but what about summertime? What, you could switch it up a little bit?
Yeah. So in the summertime, we actually carry another version of the Chota boot here. It's called the Hybrid. It's ultra light. So that's the big upside compared to the Trekker, is it's the difference in weight is, you know, really a big difference there. So what's nice about being able to use this thing is it's got big drain holes on the side, so it empties out right there. You can still use it with that breathable socks for cold mornings, but it also works and gives you ankle support for the summer.
Okay, and so with this one, this summertime version, where you know, I'm looking at it, it's definitely a lighter weight. It's got the mesh, the opening for drainage. Are you still wanting, with not utilizing the knee or the hip sock, would you wear just like a regular, you know, white sock or a wool sock?
Personally, for me, I would wear a thin, lightweight wool sock. And that's just because I've had enough of those rubs or, you know, burns on the side of your feet that don't go away. And especially if you get them on that first day of a trip, it's just a lightweight wool sock will really help to mitigate that.
Yeah, okay, cool. And so you're still then getting in and out of the water, though.
Sure.
So you're, being that you're a guide, Tim, do you do a lot of socks on a trip? I mean, you're bringing like 15 pair for a 7-day trip or something?
No, I usually have a pair a day or less. And what's nice about the like a quick dry, like a darn tough or a smart wool sock that's thin, you can set it in the sun or in the wind for, you know, half a day or less, and it dries out pretty quick.
Yeah, so you can utilize that.
Absolutely.
You sort of designate a thing that I can get it wet again.
Those are your water socks. Yeah. Those are your water socks for the day, exactly. And, you know, as long as they're durable, you're in good shape.
Yeah, cool. So being that you're a guide and people probably ask you a lot of questions either before a trip or during it, both, is footwear a key thing? Is it an important part to a trip?
Footwear can make or break a trip up here. I mean, especially spring or fall, if you're trying to keep your feet dry, you're either jumping around on rocks, hopping and skipping, and that kind of stuff, which sets you up for danger. You know, you're going to slip and fall trying to stay out of mud puddles and stuff like that. Or you're just going to have a slip or something like that, too. And if you're wearing just a heavy, let's say you're wearing a heavy muck boot or something like that, knee high in the middle of July, the last thing you want is have sweaty feet all day. So having something that breathes is really important. Having something that drains in the summer, especially.
Yeah, cool. And being that, you know, it's canoe country, if you're dealing with Kevlar, especially as you mentioned, you should be getting wet feet on a trip.
Wet boot policy is the way to go.
Yeah. So do you bring a backup pair for just kicking around camp,
sure.
You know?
Yep, and absolutely. That's what I'd suggest you use with your old tennis shoes. Keep that, smash them up, and put them in the pack. That's what you wear at camp.
Yeah.
You know, people will bring a pair of Crocs out to wear at camp. Those can be really comfortable. Something light, something easy to take on and off, but that you keep dry.
Yeah.
In fall and early spring, I'll carry more of a hiking boot, you know, a Merrell hiking boot or something like that, just for the warmth and that kind of thing. But during the summer, I carry just a really lightweight running shoe for at camp. But I always switch to my water shoes during the day. So two pairs of shoes is a must on a canoe trip like this.
Yeah, cool. So kind of the overview of the whole thing then would be when you come in, you would kind of start with Chota. Would, if you were looking to buy something or pick up a new shoe just for your trips, start with Chota and either get the seasonal options or go, you know, get a couple pair if that works for you too.
Oh, yeah.
And then maybe look into getting one of those socks. And they're sold separately, like it's a separate item.
Yeah, so the system all works together, but you can just use the boots on their own. You can use the socks with the system in there. And when they all come together, it's really a fantastic system.
Okay. And then the other thing to keep in mind is bring plenty of socks, some shorter socks, and even a backup pair of shoes.
Lightweight wool socks and a pair of camp shoes go a long way, because the last thing you want to do is get after a day on the water is to have to put on your cold, wet shoes again. So
yeah, cool. And so this is a podcast all about the Boundary Waters, and we love to share stories here. You got any just tragic tales of you know, this guy brought the, or this person brought the wrong shoe and they regretted it?
It absolutely happens. And I mean, I carry plenty of moleskin and stuff like that. I try to get ahead of that as much as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I have these same conversations we're having right now with every client that I go out with. So I want to make sure that they're getting up there and setting themselves up to have a good time. And so we want to make sure they're going out there with the right equipment and so that they can have a good time. Because there's, like I said, there's absolutely nothing worse than a big rub on the back of your heel from a pair of brand new shoes without thinking it through. So
yeah, you've never been the victim of or seen witness to a blister the size of a baseball or something?
Maybe not a baseball, but I've been victim to plenty on my own, so it's nice to I've learned that through plenty of trials and error. So yeah.
Cool, that's nice. You're bringing your own knowledge of it to the
absolutely.
To the table too. Hey, well, cool. It's great information to share for anybody that's either thinking of upgrading their own footwear, looking to, you know, you're new to canoeing, paddling in the Boundary Waters, and it sounds like Chota footwear is a place to start, and you can find that here at Paragus Northwoods. We've been talking with Tim Barton. Hey, Tim, thanks for your information, man.
No, it was a pleasure, man. Thank you.
Well, there you have it. all the answers you needed for your Portage questions. If you have additional thoughts or additional opinions, let us know. You can email us at bwcapodcast@gmail.com.
Well, so wait, before we get off shoes here, man, Matthew, what do you wear? What's your standard go-to footwear for a trip?
Well, just like Tim said, I've got a bog boot, rubber boot with the neoprene upper section that I use in the spring and fall when the water's cold. But actually, I use rock climbing approach shoes for the summer. They drain. They've got excellent traction, obviously, because they're for, you know, rock climbing. And actually, I'm wearing them right now, and I portaged with them this morning. And the one downfall is they're still wet on my feet. Mm. I got my bare feet, and I'm sitting here in the studio.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can see there being some benefit to something else.
Yeah, yeah. Nice.
What about you, Joe?
I've been all over. I've done my backpack and boots, and I got, when I lived in Oregon, you know, 8 years ago or something, that I've just still wear, and I've worn those on Portage trails, and I kind of tiptoed around at the getting in and out of the canoe when I'm riding Kevlar, and that became somewhat problematic for me after mm-hmm. I evolved, you know. I was like, this, why am I doing this? So then I got the cheap pair of black rubber boots, and those are great. I'm hopping in and out, but I've had a near spill on a Portage trail because there's not much grip, you know, the traction isn't a
plus on those.
Yeah, it's not a slippery rock. I didn't go all the way down, but I probably should have, and I don't even know how I got out of that situation. So I'm, like I said, I'm still searching. I'm still open to ideas, and Tim was the man. He had some good suggestions and point people in the right direction.
So moving into Beth Gady, I want to say that this tale is a pretty sweet story, although it's not the picturesque, beautiful loon calls and sunsets and, you know, positive encounters with nature. This is one of those stories that, a battle, you could say. But what's cool is that Beth is telling one of her earliest Boundary Waters stories. And since then, she didn't stop coming, thankfully. She's actually heading to Quetico on her 26th canoeing adventure this summer. She may even be in as we speak. So let's hear her tale.
Chance of rain, 10%. The plan. Six friends will spend 5 days canoeing a dozen gorgeous, pristine lakes in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. The fire danger rating, very high. Campfires are permitted only after 7 p.m. when the wind usually dies down. The weather forecast, 10% chance of rain every day. Perfect. Day one. The winds are gentle, the water smooth, the paddling easy. The day starts out gray, and the clouds steadily darken. Eyeing the sky, we quit paddling early and settle for a campsite that is too small for three tents. We aren't able to stake them out properly, and the rain flies sag. That night, it rains hard. Sagging rain flies leak. Day two. The rain continues. We paddle with determination, our heads down. Occasionally we peek from under our rain jacket hoods to check our heading. Rain blows into my hood, and my shirt collar grows damp, then soggy. Water wicks up my sleeves and down my back. My jacket is almost as wet inside as out. Day three, our layover day. Gradually the clouds break. With sunshine and a breeze, we dawdle over meals, read, nap, swim, tell stories, laugh, break out a flask of scotch. By nightfall, the wood is still too wet for a campfire, but our clothes and gear are dry. Then, as we sink into sleep, a storm rolls through. The lightning brilliant, the rain pounding our tents so loud we can't hear the thunder. Day four. Over breakfast, we agree 10% is meaningless. We'll go all the way out a day early. Better than setting up camp, possibly, no, likely, in the rain. As we finish breaking camp, a thick fog rolls over the rugged cliffs across the lake, only a few hundred yards away. Soon the cliffs disappear. We think we're smart to leave. We'll have to paddle hard to reach the takeout in one day, but we're optimistic. The wind, not too strong, is behind us. We cover 5 miles and stop for an early lunch, then haul our canoes and gear across another portage. The next lake comes into view through the trees, and our optimism plummets. Whitecaps. Whitecaps mean danger, sometimes panic, usually stop. And that's when we do a dumb thing. We keep going. Our paddle strokes short and fast, we slowly beat our way across a rowdy bay to a steep, bouldered shore. Now we need to turn into the wind to get around a long peninsula, and we know we can't do it. We climb out of our canoes, unwind our tow ropes, and begin to crab through waist-deep water, stumbling over rocks hidden by tannin-stained deeps, our canoes swooping in the waves. We reach the tip of the peninsula and inspect the next bay. It's small and protected, but beyond lie 3 more portages and 3 more lakes, the last lake wide and open. To reach the takeout, we'd have to paddle crosswise to the wind, more, we now know, than we can manage. Plan B, or is it C? Paddle down the near shore to a campsite. It's not far, we can see it. The wind will be with us. Bob, my paddling partner, and I head out first, but the wind keeps pushing us farther from the shore. We stroke harder, shouting pointless instructions at one another. Soon we realize we're outclassed and point the canoe toward a campsite across the bay. We land safely, but we're alone. We turn and scan the bay, then the far shore, hoping our friends will appear and signal their plan. No one. We buckle our bright orange life vests around a tree in front of the campsite. Here we are. Where are you? We start to shiver and take inventory of the packs in our canoe. We have a tent, 2 sleeping bags and mats, a water filter, leftovers from lunch, and our day's snack rations. Fingers trembling, cold shuddering through our bodies, we stake out the tent in a small meadow. Tall grasses cushion the ground. The rainfly is taut. At 3 in the afternoon, we crawl into the tent, hoping we'll somehow get dry and warm. The wind rattles our tent until long after midnight, and I sleep fitfully, alert for the snap and crash of falling trees. Day 5. The brightening sky wakes us. Bob dresses and crawls out of the tent. Creaking from our fierce paddling and 14 hours lying on the ground, he unfolds and stretches. Something on the water catches his eye and he hollers, "Here they come!" 2 of our friends paddle toward us with dry clothes. Breakfast will be served at the campsite across the bay. Bob and I quickly change clothes, pack gear, and slide the canoe into now glassy water. Over tepid oatmeal and reasonably hot coffee, we learned that after watching us fight our way across the bay, our friends had pulled their canoes out of the water and into the woods. When the wind didn't die down after several hours, they lashed the boats to trees and bushwhacked to the campsite Bob and I had tried to reach, the one where we're now dining. 3 hours later, we reach the takeout and load our cars. We stop at a cafe for second breakfast and our server reviews the storm's numbers. Wind gusts of 70 miles an hour, 15-foot waves on Lake Superior. At least 3 parties swamped trying to cross the lake where we had camped the night before. As we drive down the hill into Grand Marais, emails start popping up on my phone. I open a Forest Service report I'd signed up for before the trip. The fire danger rating, very high 5 days ago, is now very low. You may build a campfire anytime you like.
That was Beth Gady, who is currently a book editor and lives in Hudson, Wisconsin. Beth, thank you for sharing your story with the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. The first trifecta, the first 3-part episode here on the WTIP Boundary Waters podcast. So thankful to everyone, Matthew, for who participated, Julia Ruel and her mom, Linda, and all of Julia's friends who were there, too, that I got to meet, and they were so fun to hang out with for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure they were very giddy after that trip.
Yeah. And then, of course, Tim from Paragus and talking about footwear, just such an important part of everyday trips and travel in the Boundary Waters. And, of course, Beth, too, like you said. Mm-hmm. I mean, just an all-around solid episode full of diverse content. And we continue to hear from people all over the country. And we love hearing the story ideas, and please keep them coming. BWCApodcast@gmail.com. Send Matthew and I an email. We'd love to hear your story. That's what this podcast is, Matthew. Stories. We want to hear what happens to people when they're in the Boundary Waters. What happened in the past? What trips are they planning in the future? We want to hear it all.
Yeah, spread the love. We got to keep each other moving.
Hey, episode 7, in the books.
Booked.
I just sing when I paddle in, feeling, not thinking if the strokes are true. We're gonna get through to the other side. Out in the night, the waves beat the shore. You can hear them pounding, you can hear them roar. Oh, roll me, rock me in my dreams. You can roll me, rock me in my dreams. So I like to sing, I love to dance. I play the fool if I got the chance. All around the campfire light.
Well, we hope you enjoyed the episode of the WTIP Boundary Waters podcast. And of course, you can find all of the episodes, all 7, plus some short tracks now on the WTIP website. Simply just type in podcast or Boundary Waters podcast into the search icon on the homepage, and it will lead you right to it. And the music that you heard there at the end, we've been getting a number of requests are people inquiring about who is the musician that's supplying the audio there for the podcast. Well, his name's Ian Tamblyn, and he's a resident of Ontario, lives in Toronto now, but grew up in the Thunder Bay area. And he was gracious enough to provide us here at WTIP for the podcast all of his music to let us use. So we've been very appreciative of that. And in fact, let's hear another song here by Ian Tamblyn. This one's called Wood Smoke and Oranges. Thank you.
by wood smoking oranges, path of old canoe. I would course the inland ocean to be back to you. No matter where I go to, it's always home again, to the rugged northern shore and the days of sun and wind. In the land of the silver birch, cry of the loon. There's something about this country, it's a part of me and you. We nosed her in by Pakasa, out for 15 days, to set paddle and the spirit at the mercy of the waves. The Wanagans were loaded down and a gift left on the shore, for it's best that we surrender to the rugged northern shore. In the land of the silver birch, cry out the loon. There's something about this country, it's a part of me and you. In the land of the silver birch, cry out the loon. There's something about this country, it's a part of me and you. The waves smashed the smoky cliffs of Old Woman Bay, where we fought against the backswell, and then we're on our way. Talk to you of spirits by the vision pits we saw, them walk the agate beaches of the mighty Gargantua. In the land of the silver birch, cry of the loon. There's something about this country, it's a part of me and you. Turn my back upon these things I tried to deny, the coastline of my dreams, but it turns me by and by. It tossed the mighty ship around, it smashed the lighthouse door, sent shivers up my spine, the rugged northern shore. In the land of the silver birch, cry of the loon. There's something about this country, it's a part of me and you. In the land of the silver birch, cry of the loon. There's something about this country, it's a part of me and you. By wood smoke and oranges, path of old canoe, I would course the inland ocean to be back to you. No matter where I go to, it's always home again, to the rugged northern shore and the days of sun and wind.
Ian Tamblyn there with his song, Wood Smoke and Oranges. For Matthew Baxley, Joe Fredericks here, talking about the WTIP Boundary Waters podcast. Find all the episodes online, WTIP.org, and plenty more episodes in the works. We've got all kinds of stories coming from the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness, shared on the WTIP Boundary Waters podcast.